Welcome, my friend. It is ADHD Powerful Possibilities, and I am ADHD Coach Catherine. This week, we're going to do things slightly differently, but bear with me, you'll find it really helpful. I just want to take a second to say thank you to the people who get in touch and let me know that they appreciate the podcast, that it is helpful, that they learn new things, and most of all, that they feel connected and seen and understood, as well as finding things that they can use in their daily life. That is exactly what I intended with this podcast, and it makes me so joyful on a really deep level to know that I can offer this to you as regularly as possible, ideally every week. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, I appreciate a quiet direct message in social media as much as a review on any podcast platform, because I hope that the right people will find the podcast, and I guess a review would help, but it's not a big deal. Anyway, I've always hated podcasts that start with a very long thank you and ask for reviews. So this week, I thought it would be really interesting to start looking at how we can really dig in to what is good and powerful and all the potential that we have with ADHD. I've talked a little bit about this in episodes on strengths and how positive thinking is really powerful and reshapes your brain. It's a constant theme in the podcast, but I think now is a good time to be more clear about it. And so this first episode, we're going to look at why it's really important to understand your ADHD, and then think about how that helps us to manage our own ADHD and develop our personal growth. So if this is the first time you're hearing me in the podcast, I'll just say that ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, is a neurodevelopmental difference. Its foundations are largely genetic, although some people can develop ADHD-like symptoms after experiencing trauma, through brain injury, through other things like lead poisoning. It can affect your brain. But most people who have what we call ADHD are genetically different, and so they come from neurodivergent families. The most common reason for that is that we have a few genes. We think there's around 500 genes at the moment which are connected to ADHD. So there's no one that is going to change how you experience ADHD. The irony is, although it's called Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, very often we have a lot of attention. It just goes in a direction that perhaps we hadn't planned, or if you're a parent, that your child has a lot of attention for the latest game, or for their friends, or for their TV show. If you're a business owner, you have a lot of attention for one aspect of your work. It might be the social media engagement, which I'm very fond of, and not very much attention for the actual thing that makes things work, which could be admin, it could be CPD, it could be bookkeeping. So the idea that we have a deficit of attention is incorrect. As for hyperactivity, most people experience some hyperactivity. Very often when we're younger, it presents physically. And although I used to think, oh no, I've never been hyperactive, I was a very bookish child and I did read a lot, I realised that was also part of my hyperactivity, because I would read two or three books at the same time. Hyperactivity comes in different forms, and for young girls especially, it's channeled into activities that are socially acceptable. Somebody like me, who did 4 dance classes per week, cycled everywhere and just never sat still, wasn't diagnosed as hyperactive because I was doing things that were acceptable. A lot of people are missed in childhood because the hyperactivity isn't very obvious, and they may be able to get by in class. If you go back through the episodes, I talk a lot about how different stages in our life, different hormonal stages, different demand stages, can make our ADHD more obvious, but it's usually there from birth. And what is ADHD? There is a physical difference. Now, I know that I am not a scientist, but I do know that brain scans illustrate differences in ADHD brains. On brain scans and studies, they have discovered that people with ADHD generally have thinner connections between regions of their brain, especially those that are related to managing impulsive behaviour. We tend to have lower levels or lower numbers of dopamine transmitter neurons. And so these differences, both structural in terms of connection and chemical in terms of the neurotransmitters that we produce, indicate ADHD. Of course, whether we are affected by that depends a lot on our circumstances and our stage in life. And that's why ADHD is such a unique condition. It is a disability for many people. Some people don't experience it as a disability, and that is wonderful. It is largely dependent upon their life circumstances and the what I call flavour of ADHD that they have. And so when I talk about ADHD, although it has very common traits, which many of us meet the criteria for in an assessment, it is a very personal constellation. When I think of ADHD and autism, I think of a three-dimensional map. Dr. Lorna Wing described autism as a spectrum condition, and I do think there's grounds for ADHD being the same. But I'm not a scientist, so I will stay in my lane. And I would just say, for me personally, it's a spectrum. And of course, that means that some people find they are not very much affected by it, but others are extremely affected. So your personal impact of ADHD will be unique. When you find other people with ADHD, it is my hope that they also understand this is a unique condition, and your personality, your background, your stage in life, as well as your own genetic makeup, will have a big impact on how you experience this cluster of differences that we have grouped together to call ADHD. And the reason I say that is important is because when we try to apply our standard or our definition of ADHD to other people, it very quickly becomes a competition. And given how sensitive we are to rejection, how easily we are emotionally dysregulated, it's so important that we have in our minds at the beginning of any conversation with someone else who may have ADHD, that their experience will be different. Today, I want to focus on your ADHD and why it's so important that you recognise where you are affected. Dr. Barclay has talked about executive function as the who, what, when, how and why circuits of your brain all being affected. That's your executive functions. We can label them as planning, prioritization, organization, time awareness, emotional regulation, all of these things. But fundamentally, ADHD affects who you are, what you do, when you do it, how you do it, and how you feel about doing it. And the how you feel about it, the meaning, is the hot circuit. That's the one that's most likely to get us into bother with impulsive behaviour, with emotional dysregulation. And it's also important because when we are in a state of chronic stress, because our emotions are all over the place, it changes the structure of your brain. Your amygdala literally gets bigger when you are in a state of chronic emotional dysregulation, anxiety, stress, all these other difficult conditions. And unfortunately, it means that other parts of your brain are less functional. They don't go away and it's not permanent. But what we pay attention to literally grows. If we are emotionally struggling, if we're feeling anxious, upset, if we have a chronic negative view of ourselves and of our life, it's going to change your brain even more. When you have ADHD, it's really important that you have this awareness of how you're thinking and feeling affecting your brain on top of your foundational difference with ADHD. How can you discover what your flavour of ADHD is? We talk about ADHD presentations. In the old days, it was called ADD. Then they were called ADHD types. In general, there are three broad presentations, which are hyperactive, combined, and inattentive. They're fairly obvious when you describe them like that. So hyperactive are the hyperkinetic, on the go, very agitated, physically active, but also cognitively very active and always thinking, always chatting. Perhaps you have a very verbal processing young person who just chats from the minute their eyes open until the minute they go to sleep. Of course, that's not diagnostic by any stretch of the imagination, but if they have ADHD, it's a good chance that they may be hyperactive presentation. Inattentive presentation ADHD is, as you would expect, the daydreamy perhaps needs to be prompted to pay attention. You may find that, like me, you often forget what you were doing within a couple of seconds of starting a task, and then you need to bring yourself back to focus and have a prompt nearby. But if you're inattentive, that doesn't mean that you're not experiencing some hyperactivity. Usually it's an inner monologue conversation you have with yourself, and that could be hyperactive. Of course, combined means that we have experienced both. There's some suggestion that we all experience some hyperactivity to begin with and become combined or inattentive as we get older. But again, everyone is different. So think about which one of those kinds of presentation you fit most at the moment. And that gives you a very broad starting point for thinking about your ADHD. The next step would be to think about your daily life. You can begin now rather than going back to your childhood, if you like. But think about what made you think about ADHD to begin with. Were you very forgetful? Were you procrastinating a lot? Were you constantly on the go one day, but then very tired and unable to focus the next? Just take some time to think about, what does your ADHD look like in your daily life? You might want to use your mobile phone and take some notes on there. You might use voice notes when you notice something is not how you would like. Self-observation, I think, is the most powerful tool, and it's one of the reasons that I'm starting with this topic. You might also enjoy journaling, and I think journaling has got some really beneficial side effects, but I sometimes hesitate to recommend it because quite often I cannot write fast enough to keep up with my brain. So I tend to dictate notes into my phone, and there are free and paid apps that you can use to transcribe that into text. Because although it is, and this is ironic, although I can talk quite quickly, when I'm listening, I prefer to have a written text in front of me. Because like many people with ADHD, auditory processing is a challenge for me. You may also, if you're feeling brave, ask others for their insight. What have they noticed is difficult for you? Where do they recognise that you need extra help, that you maybe struggle? Now, why have I asked you to think about what your kind of ADHD is, where it affects your life, when I spend so much time talking about the strengths of ADHD or the strengths of each person in their character? Because it's important that we are aware of where ADHD is affecting our daily life. Unless we're aware of it, we can't begin to think about scaffolding, strategies, or if we actually need to make a fundamental change to how we're living. There's no point having a generic solution that you adopt when actually what you really need is a deep understanding of your ADHD, your thinking and self-belief patterns, and what works for you in terms of your executive skills and your processing. So before you begin making any changes to your life, spend some time thinking about what your ADHD flavour or profile is like, and really spend time noticing where it's affecting you just now. I should say, do all of this with no judgment. As soon as we begin to judge ourselves, our emotional dysregulation will kick in and we will begin to feel unhappy, stressed, anxious. When we're judging, we can't learn. And learning is really good for your brain, for everybody's brain, but especially people with ADHD. So get curious, get full of wonder. Where is my ADHD today and how is it affecting me? If you're somebody who struggles with procrastination, for example, which is the topic of my ebook that's out just now, there are different ways to approach it depending on what's causing it, which can be dependent upon both your personal state and your ADHD. For example, if you're somebody who is more emotionally dysregulated, you're more likely to struggle with procrastination because you don't believe that you can succeed, or you're scared of what will happen if you get it wrong, that perfectionist impulse. That's somebody who's experiencing emotional dysregulation. And so the support for that would be finding a cheerleader, somebody to support you, finding people who can recognise your work, recognise your effort, and just see how you're trying, so that eventually you learn to do that for yourself. If you're somebody who finds that they regularly sabotage their long-term goals because they have some short-term thing that's much more fun, for example, if you're trying to get your business finances in order and you keep putting it off and spending time on YouTube, that's your dopamine. That is your reward insensitivity. That's part of your ADHD. And it's an impulsive decision driven by your neurochemistry. And when you recognise that, it's so much easier to disengage than when you think, I'm a bad person, I clearly don't care that much, so I'm just going to continue scrolling, rather than say, oh, there's my brain chemistry again. I know what to do to get myself feeling better, and then I'll tackle this job. And that will vary from person to person. But for example, I worked with a business owner who was extremely talented, but who really struggled with procrastination, and to the point where they were wondering if they should even continue with their business, if they would ever succeed. Of course they did, but in the short term, we had to identify ways for them to motivate themselves through fun. This is where people start to roll their eyes. Honestly, the most empowering thing that person did was develop a playlist that they could blast for 10 minutes that would completely shift their emotional state, their physical state, because their brain responded. When your brain responds, your emotions shift, and then you have the lovely neurochemical soup that you need to feel better about beginning a task that isn't instantly rewarding. Of course, helping clients understand their own version of ADHD is something that I do every day. It's one of the most wonderful parts of my job, is when people recognise it themselves and they have this self-awareness that is actually quite high up in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but it's something they recognise, and then they can adapt the tools, the strategies to work for themselves. It's part of my framework that I use regularly now. And it is incredible to see the change when we have those light bulb moments of recognition of what is happening and why. And without judgment, we can change direction, and suddenly it all starts to flow beautifully. And if you're an adult and you're a parent or grandparent, you can demonstrate that for the young people in your life. They can watch you grow, and they can learn that it's okay to change direction, and that you are coaching yourself. Ultimately, that's the goal of my group program, is for people to learn to coach themselves. So what are some tools that you can use apart from observation and asking other people? Obviously, this isn't available to everyone, but a diagnosis, an assessment by a professional is the gold standard. And when you go for your assessment, they will ask you questions that you will need to answer with these insights that you have gained from your self-observation. And I also have a presentation tool that you can use yourself. I'll include a link to it in the show notes and dig it out of the Google Drive vault so that people can access it again. And this also allows you to understand your presentation of ADHD and start to recognise some of the more common behaviours that you experience with ADHD. But the most powerful thing you can do is to take that time to observe it yourself and make a note, either on your phone or in a notepad if you prefer to write, or use your voice notes to dictate. Along with understanding how it's affecting your behaviour, you might also want to pay some attention to the parts of your life that can make ADHD much worse. For instance, do you find that if you've had two or three nights with not very much sleep, you find it very difficult to focus? Of course, everybody does, but when we're already people who are challenged in terms of directing our focus like a torchlight, and it tends to swing around at random, that's a clue for you to start thinking about how you want to reshape your life. Perhaps you've noticed that when there are too many things happening at the weekend and then work is busy, you begin to experience more stress, and then it's really difficult for you to plan out projects, to prioritise tasks, to come up with solutions that you would normally have no problem with. Again, everyone experiences this, but people with ADHD experience this more often, and I do also think we are more aware of it. But it's really important that you record it, because the one thing that is almost universal is a very poor working memory and a lack of remembering things for ourselves. We know things at work, and when I mention it, clients say, "Oh, of course, yes, I did that before and it worked really well, didn't it?" And I do that too. "Yes, it worked wonderfully. Oh, I just forgot. Why did I forget?" And it's because of ADHD. So when you recognise that things affect you negatively, you're going to be able to work out what the opposite would be, and then use that to start building your own life framework to work better with your brain and to have a really great life, because that's what everybody deserves. So I hope that you understand how important it is to take the time and recognize your own flavor of ADHD, that you've identified one or two tools that are easy to access and that you can use to start mapping your own ADHD experience and develop your own framework. And I do hope that you're able to see it comes down to your brain. And although we have got little control over our genetics, we do have the power to influence our brain structure. We can increase and decrease parts of our brain by repetition and even by how we think. So next week, I will talk more about the idea of building these neural networks, these connections. We'll look a bit more at individual executive functions and especially how they apply to people who are in charge of their work. Whether you're self-employed, a solopreneur, an entrepreneur with a staff of 50 or 100 people, or you're a manager and you're really feeling things are just getting a bit on top of you, next week we're going to focus on how you can manage your executive functions, whatever you're doing at work. So until next week, spend some time thinking about your ADHD, and until we meet again, take care.